ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Arrivo. Forgive me, please forgive me for being late, but I was in another meeting. I wish to extend my very sincere gratitude to all of you for so kindly being with us on this very auspicious and special Sunday festival day. The reason this strange looking red curtain is blocking our view of the altar and consuming so much of the space of the temple room is that the pujaris are organizing for the pleasure of Radha Gopinath and all of the assembled devotees a beautiful, extraordinary darshan tonight. If you want to see it, you have to come. I was just back there. And it's incredible how a spirit of devotional service can empower people with such incredible creativity and enthusiasm. No one gets paid. And nobody gets prestige because nobody even knows who did what. But for the pleasure of the devotees and the pleasure of the Lord, devotees find the greatest joy and meaning in life. Today is Sarat Purnima, the full moon of the autumn season. In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains how many people of India consider that this is the most beautiful night of the whole year. What happened 5,000 years ago, approximately, when Sri Sri Radha Gopinath were performing their eternal pastimes of the spiritual world on this earth in Sri Vrindavan Dham, as the moon was rising? We will explain something on that subject at the end of today's discussion. We'd like to begin by talking something about the month of Kartik. Today, according to the Gaudiya Vaishnav calendar, is the first day of the month of Kartik. The 12 months of the calendar, according to the Vedic system, each month is given a name of Krishna. But this particular month, Damodar, is also called Kartik. Kartik is a name of Srimati Radharani. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami tells that Urjasvat, Urjavrat, is the spiritual practices that one is that are prescribed during this month. Srimati Radharani is Urjeshwari, which means she is the supreme goddess of all the Lord's potencies. Our acharyas and our scriptures teach us that whatever spiritual practices are sincerely performed during this month, especially in Vrindavan, are specially blessed by Srimati Radharani. It is the time of the year wherein accessing the grace of Sri Radha, accessing the love within our heart, is made specially available if we take the opportunity. Of course, Srila Prabhupada explained that wherever there is a temple or a setting where devotees are gathered together in the common spirit of speaking about Radha and Krishna, chanting the glories of Radha and Krishna, and serving in the mood of Vrindavan, that place is also Vrindavan. So we are in Vrindavan now, by Srila Prabhupada's grace. And in a few days, many of us will be in Mayapur, which is none different than Vrindavan. So many beautiful opportunities are being provided for our spiritual progress. During the month of Kartik, several very sacred festivals are honored. For today's class, I would like to very briefly discuss some of the events that we will observe during this month, with your permission. Today, the first day of Kartik is Sarat Purnima, which we will use as culmination for this class. But it is also the day of the disappearance of Murari Gupta, which is quite significant. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Radha and Krishna appear as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this age of Kali. And just as many of Krishna's eternal associates assisted Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes, so did the associates of his many avatars. Murari Gupta is Hanuman. Hanuman represents selfless service. In fact, if you go to Vrindavan, even today, you will find in all the different sides of Vrindavan there are temples of Hanumanji. Because he is such an example of bhakti. He's the protector of the Dham. In fact, in Kurukshetra, Krishna's chariot, who was on the flag of the chariot? Everyone, very loudly, please. Hanuman. Thank you. So we can only approach Vrindavan. We can only approach the path of bhakti through this spirit of servitude. And Hanuman represents the spirit of service. Unmotivated, uninterrupted service. So absorbed in Sri Ram that when he saw Sita putting, what is that called? Sindhu. She was putting it in that line of her hair. And Hanumanji asked, why are you doing that, Sita Devi? She said, because it makes Ram happy. So the next day, Ram came to visit Hanuman, and his entire body was covered with sindhu. I said, why have you done this? He said, because Sita told me it makes you happy. His only motive was to make the Lord happy. One day he was crying in separation from Sri Ram. Someone asked, why are you crying? He said, because I want to see Sita and Ram. They said, well, don't cry. They're in your heart. They're in my heart. So monkeys have strong nails. He ripped open his chest. It was like an open heart surgery. He ripped open his chest, ripped open his all his ribs, and went right to his heart, and then ripped open his heart. It really was open heart surgery. And he looked there, and there Ram and Sita personally appeared to give them their darshan, And then everything healed immediately. There was no problem. Because he is a spiritual body anyway. But this is absorption. When Ram needed a mountain, an herb, Ram wanted an herb, and Hanuman, he wanted to do so much extra service, he brought the whole mountain in which the herb was in. So Hanumanji represents unmotivated, uninterrupted service in which no obstacle will ever distract us. So many obstacles came before Hanumanji when he was trying to cross over the Indian Ocean to Sri Lanka to give Sita Ram's message. But he proved nothing could distract him. So we begin the month of Kartik by remembering Sri Hanumanji and being in this mood of unmotivated, uninterrupted service. And he appeared as Murari Gupta. We can give many classes on Murari Gupta. There's so much to be said. When Nimai, Lord Chaitanya, as a child, was playing his pastimes as a student, Murari Gupta was one of his classmates. And Murari Gupta was very much concerned with talking about Lord Ram, Lord Krishna. But Nimai would always be challenging people with grammatical puzzles. And the devotees wanted to run away because they didn't want to talk about all these materialistic things. But at the same time, Nimai was so beautiful, and because he was actually Ram himself, Murari Gupta couldn't give up his association. But Murari Gupta was such a scholar, they would debate, Lord Chaitanya would debate with him, back and forth and back and forth, and Lord Chaitanya would sometimes defeat him. Then he would say, Murari, go home, do your studies, come back, and I'll have more questions for you tomorrow. And then Lord Chaitanya touched Murari Gupta. And with that touch, his heart literally exploded with ecstatic love. His entire body was thrilled, was trembling in divine ecstasy. Tears were pouring from his eyes, his hairs were standing on end. And he was thinking, this Nimai is not an ordinary child. Just by his touch, such potency to awaken love. Now when Lord Chaitanya returned from Gaya and revealed himself as the greatest of all devotees, Murari Gupta was his constant associate and friend. During the Mahaprakash, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was fulfilling all the desires of all the devotees. He called Murari Gupta. And he said, Murari, look and see me. And suddenly, Lord Chaitanya transformed and revealed a darshan. He became Lord Rama, with a complexion like Durva grass, holding a golden bow. And on one side was Sita, on the other side was Lakshman. And there were thousands and thousands of monkey soldiers, all with folded palms, offering prayers. Then Murari Gupta looked down at himself and happened to see that he had a tail. He had become a monkey, and he fell unconscious. Then Lord Chaitanya called out, Hanuman, Hanuman! Don't you see that Ravana, what he has done? Go and give my message to Sita. Immediately, Murari Gupta got up in the mood of Hanuman, ready to serve. He said, Lakshman, don't you remember? Don't you remember who you are? He said, look at Lakshman. For his sake, you lifted the entire Gandhamadana mountain and flew thousands of miles with it. And look at Sita. Seeing her dilemma in the clutches of Ravana, you shed a shoreless ocean of tears of love for her. Now I am reminding you, I am Ram and you are Hanuman. Then he asked Murari Gupta, I will give you any benediction you like, whatever you ask. In the spirit of Hanuman, Murari Gupta only asked for one benediction. He said, I am very low. I am very fallen. I am very undeserving. But if you want to give me a benediction, just bless me with this, that in every birth I may take, allow me to be in the association of your devotees. Whoever considers you their master and they're their servant, let me be the servant of the servant of such servants of yours. That was his only desire, to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord's devotees. Today is the disappearance day of Murari Gupta. One day, Murari was thinking of the various incarnations of the Lord. How Lord Ram, how he, toward the end of his Leela, well, it will take too long to discuss those details. But he was thinking that if Lord Chaitanya leaves, it will be unbearable to live. I don't want to see this final pastime of Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, before he leaves, I will end my own life. So he got a really sharp knife, specially for cutting conch shells. And he was planning to actually end his life with it. But Lord Chaitanya knows everything. He's within the heart of all living beings. One day he came, on that very day, he came to Murari Gupta's house and said, "Murari, are you my servant?" Murari said, "Yes, I am your servant." He said, "Will you do anything I ask you?" He said, "Anything you ask, I am yours." He said, "Give me that knife." Murari said, "What knife? Who told you about a knife? There is no knife." He said, "I know that knife that you want to kill yourself with." He said, "My Lord, I can't bear the idea of your leaving me." And the Lord said, "Well, I cannot bear that you leave me." So Lord Chaitanya went right into his house and knew exactly where the knife was hidden, and he took it. And then Lord Chaitanya told him that, "I cannot live without my devotees. You are the pleasure, the joy of my life is to be like with devotees like you." In this way, the inconceivable mysterious nature of the love between the Lord for the devotee and the devotee for the Lord. This is how the month of Kartik begins. In a few days is the disappearance day of Narottam Das Thakur, one of the greatest of the devotees of the Lord. The last lecture I gave on Narottam Das Thakur was 6 hours. So I'll spare you from having to go through that. Narottam Das Thakur was the son of a king, very, very wealthy person. And he was the heir to everything. But by hearing the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and hearing about the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his heart grew such a deep desire to go to Vrindavan and dedicate his whole life to the service of the devotees. Just by hearing about the devotees, he had committed his life to serve them and was willing to give up everything and anything for that blessing. And the more he heard about them, the more he was feeling pangs of separation. And knowing his heart, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared to him and gave him his own love. Lord Chaitanya invested in Narottam Das Thakur's his own love, which is Radha's love for Krishna. And ultimately, Narottam Das Thakur left everything and went to Vrindavan, where he took initiation from Lokanath Goswami, became best friends with Srinivasacharya, Shamananda, and a student of Jiva Goswami. The history of his humility, his love, compassion, even upon people who hated him, who tried to destroy him, his ecstasies. Tens, hundreds, and thousands of people, from Brahmin scholars to murderers and dacoits, were transformed into pure, compassionate lovers of God by the influence of Narottam Das Thakur. And his songs, his poems, and his example are one of the deepest, greatest inspirations for Gaudiya Vaishnavas over the past 450 years. To love God means to love those who love God too. In fact, it means to love everyone. When Srinivas Acharya disappeared from this world, Narottam Das Thakur was feeling such separation, such deep friendships, that he wrote that beautiful song, Jaya Nilo Premadana, which even today we sing for the disappearance of Vaishnavas. And when his very, very dear friend Ramchandra Kaviraj disappeared from the world, Narottam Das Thakur was in the forest, in the highest ecstasies of love in separation from the Vaishnavas. And one day, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti and one other devotee in the Murshidabad area, I think Gambila, he went into the Ganges and he told the devotees, please take the water of the Ganges and pour it over me. And as they did, wherever the Ganges water touched, that part of his body turned into milk and merged into the Ganga. And they were weeping. They didn't want to put any more water on him. But he said, no, put. Bathe me. And in this way, his body merged into Mother Ganga. And he returned to the spiritual world to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and all of their associates. Also this month is Birchandra, the son of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who manifested such compassion. He was the compassionate energy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Beautiful story of once he came to Kethuri Gram for one of the Gaur Purnima festivals, and he was dancing. Or this may have been Srikanda. He was dancing and dancing, and anyone he glanced upon, their love of God was awakening. There was one blind man who could hear the excitement of everyone watching Birchandra dancing. And he didn't say anything, but in his heart of heart, he was hurt about it. He said, I would give anything if even for 1 second I could have the vision to see him dance. This was the only desire in his heart. And the Lord reciprocates with our desires. At that moment, in front of everybody, a person born blind who never saw the light of day, suddenly his eyes opened. He had perfect 20/20 vision. But more than that, he had spiritual vision. And he saw the beautiful form of Birchandra glancing upon him, smiling. And the person began to dance in ecstasy. His life became perfect. Not only could he see, but he could see God wherever he looked from that day on. During this month is Bahulastami, the day that Sri Radha Kund and Shama Kund appeared within this world. After Lord Krishna liberated Aristasura, who came in the form of a huge demoniac bull, Srimati Radharani, she said to Krishna when he came to her, that now you have killed a bull, a male cow, So you are contaminated by this sin. Do not touch me. Krishna said, but he was a demoniac. He was in the guise of a bull. If I didn't do that, he would have killed all of you. She said, that's a detail. Whatever. Still, he was in the form of a bull. Well, what must I do? She said, you should go to all the holy places in the whole universe and take your bath. So Krishna, with his heel of his foot, he stomped it in the ground and made an impression. And then he personally called for all the holy places in the whole universe to personally appear there. And they all came personified with folded hands. And he said, please fill this kund with all of your watchers. And they filled it. That was Shama Kund. Govindaji took his bath and then came out. And he said to Radharani, you took the side of a demon. Why don't you now purify yourself by taking a bath in my kund? And she said, I will not take a bath in your kund because the sin of killing cows is in your kund. I will make my own kund. So she found one of the hoof prints of Aristasura, and her and the Sakis and Gopis with their, they took off their bracelets and broke them into like little shovels, and they were digging. And she made a chain of gopis that went all the way to Manasi Ganga. They were handing buckets of water. Seeing Radharani and gopis working so hard, Krishna was not happy. So he turned to the personification representing all the holy places in the universe. And that person came out of Shamakund and approached Srimati Radharani with folded palms, bowed at her lotus feet, and prayed, please, I am the very embodiment of all the holy places in the universe. The only desire we have in our lives is if you bestow this supreme fortune and blessing upon us. We beg a benediction from you. Because he was so sincere, with such love, Sri Radhika replied, what is that benediction? And he said, allow us to fill your kund also. So she smiled and looked at Krishna and said, so be it. And the water from Shamakund overflooded and filled Sri Radha Kund. And Krishna told Srimati Radharani, as you are most dear to me, similarly Radha Kund is equally dear to me. And every day in the afternoon, Radha and Krishna, with their most intimate associates, perform their Rasa Leela and other such pastimes on the bank of Sri Radha Kund. Rupa Goswami, quoting from the scriptures, has declared to us that Radha Kund is the holiest of all holy places. Of all the planets within this universe, the earth is most holy because so many of the avatars of the Lord come. Of all places on earth, Bharatvarsha, India, is very sacred because of so many of the pastimes the Lord has performed in so many incarnations here. And within India, the holiest place is the area of Mathura, where the source of all avatars, the avatari, took his birth. And in all of Mathura, the holiest place is the forest of Vrindavan, where Krishna performed his most intimate pastimes. And in the forest of Vrindavan, the holiest place is Govardhan. And in the area of Govardhan, the most sacred of all sacred places in the entire creation is Radha Kund. The water of Radha Kund is the liquid love of Srimati Radharani. And just by seeing that water, touching that water, what to speak of bathing in that water. If we have proper consciousness to access that blessing, Radha's love fills our hearts and perfects our lives. On Bahulastami, at midnight, hundreds and thousands of Vrijavasis and pilgrims will be there taking their baths at Sri Radha Kund. Deepavali, or Diwali, it is the day in Ram Lila when, after 14 years exiled into the forest, Ram, Sita, and Lakshman return to Ayodhya. And everyone welcomes them with the lamps of their love. For this festival, Yashoda Mai woke up very early in the morning because she wanted to churn special yogurt into butter for the pleasure of Krishna. Gopal, who was sleeping in his little bed. As she was churning, making butter, she would sing songs about Krishna's pastimes. See, Vrindavan, when Krishna was out herding the cows during the day, he would perform so many leelas. This is later on, of course. Or the calves. And the gopas would tell all the other Vrijavasis, and all day the next day they would just be remembering and composing beautiful songs about those pastimes. When Krishna was just a small child, Yashoda Mai was with him all day and all night. And practically everything he did, everything he said, was so absolutely charming. It was permanently imprinted in Yashoda Mai's heart. And her and the other gopis would compose beautiful poems just to help each other remember Krishna 24 hours a day. So she would be singing about Krishna. Not exactly to help them remember. More accurately, it was just an expression of their spontaneous love to compose these songs. And as she was singing about Krishna's beauty, Krishna's pastimes, immersed in remembrance of him, milk began to flow from her breasts. Now God is Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. God is not in need of anything. But his nature is he is always hungry for the love of his devotees. As that milk was flowing from Yashoda Mai, it was her motherly love for Krishna manifesting. Now, as has been explained so many times before, Krishna does not accept what you offer, but the intention in which it is offered. So many ladies throughout history, milk comes out of them. But it doesn't wake Krishna up. But Yashoda Mai, it was her love. That milk was her love. And Krishna was so thirsty for that milk that he woke up and came out of his bed, walked right over to Yashoda Mai and put one hand on the churning rod to stop her and demanded, "Stop all this other business and give me your milk." So her heart melted, and Krishna climbed up on her lap, and she began to feed him her milk. And oh, how he was enjoying that love. So beautiful. This is God, who in some religions appears as a very, very stern father who throws thunderbolts and destroys universes. Mahavishnu, Karuna Dakshay Vishnu, is only an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Gopal. And what happens when he sucks? Yes. Little Gopal was sucking Mother Yashoda's milk with all his might. He was really sucking enthusiastically. Mahavishnu, when he sucks, the entire universe goes into his belly. Not the universe, the entire cosmic manifestation, all the unlimited universes. So this is Krishna, conquered by the love of his devotee. Who's more lovable? Mahavishnu devouring cosmic manifestations, or Krishna crying for the milk of his mother? Should we take a vote? Mahavishnu. Say Hari Bol if Krishna is your vote. You are Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So Krishna was enjoying his mother's love. But then the milk started boiling over in the next room where she had milk cooking. And that was the very, very special milk, Padmaganda milk, that was sweet like lotus nectar from the choicest of the cows of all Nanda Maharaja's herd. And that milk was so sacred, so fragrant, so nutritious. And she was making a special preparation just for Krishna on Diwali. So she put Krishna down so that she could save that milk so she can offer something so delicious to Krishna. It was all for Krishna. But Krishna wanted to attract the whole world for all time to come. So he was thinking, why she has left. He wanted to teach the world that exclusive devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna is the highest perfection. So he appeared to be angry, and he took a stone and broke the pot that she was churning. Then he went to the next room and he saw a grinding mortar. And he climbed up the grinding mortar and there was some butter in a clay pot hanging from ropes from the ceiling. So he broke it open. He reached up and started to eat it, and then he called the local monkeys. And so many monkeys came into the house, or into the courtyard of Yashoda Mai, and Krishna was personally feeding all the monkeys. In his heart of hearts, he was thinking, in my past life as Lord Ramchandra, you risked so much to serve me by fighting that battle against Ravana. And at that time, I was living in the forest and I had nothing to give you in return. So now come and take this butter. So the monkeys were enjoying and Krishna was enjoying. And Yashodamai came back after saving the milk. And Krishna was gone. The pot's broken. Where is he? Then she saw his little tiny butter footprints on the floor. She followed them. And there, Krishna was on the grinding mortar, eating butter and feeding it to monkeys. And meanwhile, many of his friends were watching. And he was looking very nervously in all directions to see if his mother was coming. She picked up a stick. Not to hit him. She would never hit him. But she had to teach him a lesson. She wanted to show him the stick. Prabhupada in Gurukul, he said, never hit children, but you can show them a stick if they disobey. So Mother Yashoda picked up a stick and she was very quietly sneaking up to Krishna. The monkey saw her and he started... They were so scared. They all started diving through the windows and diving away and running away. And then Krishna looked around and he saw his little cowherd friends all running away. Then he saw Yashodamai approaching him with a stick. So he jumped off the grinding mortar and ran. Yashoda ran after him. He was running, she was running, he was running, and she was running. Flowers were falling from her hair. Some of the flowers were on Krishna's side, and some were on Yashoda's side. The ones that were on Yashoda's side, they said, they were thinking to themselves that she's having such difficulty catching Krishna. Maybe our excess weight is slowing her down. So they dove to the floor to make her lighter. And those that were on Krishna's side were thinking that she's going to catch Krishna and punish him. We don't want to be a part of this. So they jumped off. Ultimately, no one can catch Krishna. But by Krishna's own will, he was captured by his mother's love. And Krishna was crying. He was actually crying. And the cudgel, the black mascara around his eyes were mixing with his tears and it was flowing and making streaks down his face and on his chest. His lips were quivering. His limbs were trembling. His eyes were restlessly moving up in different directions. He couldn't even look at his mother. And he cried out, "Mother, mother, please, put down that stick. I'm sorry. I promise I'll never do this again. Just give me another chance." Queen Kunti remembered this scene in great love. And she was glorifying Krishna. That he who is feared by fear personified was afraid of his mother. Now in Bhagavad Gita, 11th chapter, we read about the Virat Rupa, the universal form. Even Arjuna, the most fearless warrior in all of the world, he was very much afraid to see this darshan of Krishna. Well, the Virat Rupa is just an expansion of an expansion of an expansion, insignificant expansion of Gopal. He's the original source of all incarnations, the original source of all existence. His personification in this world is all devouring time. Was he really afraid of his mother? Was he just pretending to make the pastime interesting? Was it just like a show? No, he really was afraid. Achintya Shakti, Krishna's inconceivable potencies. By the power of his mother's love, he was actually exhibiting these feelings. This is the sweetness and the beauty of Krishna. He who is beyond all fear exhibits these emotions in reciprocation to the pure, unalloyed love of his mother. Yashoda Mai didn't like to see Krishna like this, so she threw the stick over him. Krishna, you should not be so naughty. She had other chores to perform that day. It was a holy day. And to protect Krishna from doing other mischief, because he was very mischievous that day. After all, there were monkeys with claws, and there were bulls with horns, and there were insects, and so many ways that he could hurt himself. So while she was performing her duties, she took a silk rope, the same rope that is used to tie the calves. And she was going to bind Krishna around the waist and tie him to the grinding mortar. But as she put the silk rope around Krishna's waist, it was two fingers too short. What to do? She picked up another piece of rope, tied a tight knot, put the two ropes together, put it around Krishna's waist. It was exactly two fingers too short. Another rope, bigger rope, tied that with the other two ropes. When she put it around Krishna's waist, it was two fingers too short. She picked up every rope in the entire house. And soon other gopis found out about this. And they all came from their houses with all their ropes. There were mountains of ropes in Yashoda Mai's house, and all the gopis together were helping Yashoda Mai tie them all together. And even though there was enormous proportions of ropes all tied together, when she went to put it around Krishna's waist, it was exactly two fingers too short. This is God. Krishna didn't grow. It's not that Krishna became fatter and fatter and fatter. He was the same. His waist was probably this big, and the ropes could have circumambulated Bombay. But it was always two fingers too short. Now, if you ask a mathematician to try to figure out how that's possible, the only conclusion is you have to surrender to Krishna to understand. Krishna's inconceivable. Krishna can put a banyan tree into a banyan seed. For Krishna, he's unlimited. One time Yashoda Mai looked in Krishna's mouth to see if he ate dirt, and she saw the entire universe within his belly, within his mouth. But his mouth didn't grow. She saw all the planets, and all the devatas, and all the human beings, and all the 8,400,000 species of life. She saw herself. Everything in a mouth this big, that is Krishna. So Yashoda Mai, she was perspiring. her sari was loosening. She kept tying more and more and more ropes, and some of the gopis were saying, "Don't you see, Krishna is not going to let you tie him up." Some were saying that God must be in favor of Krishna. He doesn't want him to be tied up. After all, there's no way. But Yashoda Mai was so motherly. She was thinking, "No, no, I will tie him." And she was, in her mind, she was thinking, "I have to protect him no matter what." And she was also thinking, "I just have to find out how much rope it's going to take to bind my son." And seeing the determination of her love, Krishna allowed himself to be bound by a tight knot. Those two fingers, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, they are representative. To bind Krishna, two things are important. One is our enthusiasm. Our enthusiasm and determination to serve under all circumstances. But that's not enough. The other is Krishna's mercy. And Krishna, unless Krishna allows himself to be tied, no matter what we do, we cannot do. Our enthusiasm is just an expression of our sincerity to attract Krishna's mercy. There's a verse in the Gita, Raga Dvesha Vimuktaishtu. What is that verse? Vishayanindriyashtaran Atma Vishaya Prasada Madhigashchati. That one who follows the regulative principles of freedom, who follows the path of bhakti sincerely, can attain the mercy of the Lord. And by that mercy, we become free from all the attachments and aversions of this world. Krishna wanted to show the world for all time to come that he is conquered by the love of his devotee. He wanted to show the world forever that bhakti, love and devotion, is the supreme power, because it is the power of Srimati Radharani, Krishna's supreme pleasure potency. All devotion is her power. Even a drop of her love that manifests through any of our hearts can conquer Krishna. When we are totally conquered by love for Krishna, Krishna is conquered by that love. That is the deepest mystery and highest secrets of all wisdom cultures and all scriptures. Krishna was bound by the rope of Yashoda's affection. Affection. But then Krishna, when Yashoda Mai went back to do her duties, he wanted to perform some more mischief. Apparently. He saw two Arjuna trees in the courtyard and he crawled and pulled that grinding mortar between the trees and then crawled a little more and both the trees crashed down to the ground. And Nala Kuvera and Manigriva came out of those trees, two great demigods, sons of Kuvera, who were extremely arrogant. And because of that arrogance, they were selfish and disrespectful. And they offended the great Rishi Narada. Out of his mercy, he understood nothing less than making them into trees will curb their pride. But let them become Krishna's associates. They became trees in Krishna's courtyard. They were trees for a long time. But it culminated, they got to watch Krishna's leelas. And ultimately Krishna delivered them and gave them pure devotional service. A few days later this month is Govardhan Puja. Perhaps the favorite most of all the Lord's leelas. Nanda Maharaj was performing his annual traditional family worship of Indra with a great amount of food and other types of paraphernalia. And little Gopal was only 7 years old. He said, "Father, what are you doing? What is this sacrifice? Who is it for? What is the purpose of it? What do you hope to gain from it? I'm your son, so you should not keep any secrets from me." So Nanda Maharaj explained that my father and his father and his father, for generations we are doing this because we are cowherd men. We require grains, we require crops, because if there's not grass, the cows have nothing to eat and they will die. And if we don't have food, then we will not survive. We're farmers. We absolutely depend on rain. And rain is the gift of Indra. So every year we make this puja to offer our gratitude to Indra and also to satisfy Indra so that he will provide rains. Krishna replied, first he spoke the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which is quite technical actually. But in essence he said, if you do good, you get good karma. If you do bad, you get bad karma. And demigods, all they can do is supply you the reactions to your karma. So if we're good people, then Indra has to give us rain. And if we're not good people, he doesn't have to give us rain. So what do we need this Indra for? Actually, our cows are depending on the grass that grows on Govardhan Hill. So we should, and the Brahmins, if we please the Brahmins, they are so close to God, then God is pleased, and then the demigods have to give you whatever you want. So let's take all this paraphernalia for Indra and worship the Brahmins, the cows, and Govardhan Hill. Nanda Maharaj said, well, let's first worship Indra, then we'll do this. And Krishna said, no, let us do this immediately. And then Krishna gave very elaborate instructions of how to do. So they cooked huge feast, gigantic feast. Prabhupada describes, and Srimad Bhagavatam describes so many of the preparations. They made mountains and mountains and mountains of bhoga. They offered it to Govardhan Hill. And then Giriraj Govardhan personified himself as a gigantic, supreme, divine person. And Krishna, who was the same person as Giriraj himself, was on the ground and bowed down, and all the Brijavasis bowed down. And then Giriraj took all the offerings with his hands and ate them instantly. Mountains, lakes, kuns of different types of bhoga. And after he finished all of it, he wanted more. And very loudly he cried out, "Aniyo! Aniyo! Give me more. Aniyor." And there was nothing left. So then by Krishna's arrangement, he offered a tulsi leaf. And Giriraj said, "Now I am satisfied." Then Krishna led all the Vrijavasis to circumambulate. They did full parikrama of Sri Giriraj. And then they did so many nice pujas. And meanwhile, Giriraj, whatever he ate, he returned it all. He manifested all those mountains and mountains and mountains of bhoga. Now it was Mahaprasad. And Krishna, under his instruction, Nanda Maharaj and the others, distributed it to everyone without discrimination. Everyone had feasts of prasad. The Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, the animals, the monkeys, the cows, the peacocks, the deers, everyone was fed prasad. It was a wonderful, joyous festival. Everyone was so happy, except Anja was not happy. He was some, because she's a devotee. He's a great devotee, Indra. Please don't offend Indra. Unless you really have a connection to Krishna. And then, if you have connection to Krishna, you won't offend Indra either. Indra was so angry. He called the Samvartaka clouds. These are clouds for devastation of the universe. You may be inconvenienced by the rain today. Nothing. This is just, it's just a little cloud from the Arabian Sea. But these clouds, Samvartaka clouds, within a matter of hours, they make the whole world into an ocean, one ocean. And they, Indra said, this talkative child, Krishna, due to his influence, Nanda Maharaj and the Brijavasis took all that was meant for me and offered it to this mountain. Destroy them. Torrents of rain started pouring down. Now, for us, rain comes in drops. There were no drops. They were pillars. Pillars of water, massive pillars of water, were pouring down from the sky. And the Brijavasi saw this. It was dark, lightning, thunder, like we've never seen. And everyone came running to Krishna. The Brijavasis had the cows in the front of them. They said, Krishna, it's very cold, and it's raining very hard, and Indra's very angry, and look, your cows are cold. And the poor cows, they were trying to cover their calves. And they were mooing in great pity. And the bulls, they were looking up at the sky. And they were very... And Krishna smiled. He said, follow me, I will protect you. And Krishna went to Govardhan Hill. And as effortlessly as a little child lifts a mushroom from the ground, he lifted Govardhan Hill. It made a tumultuous sound. Now at that time, Govardhan Hill was so high and so big that its peaks were piercing the clouds. It was like Himalayas in those days. Now for internal confidential reasons, it's been getting smaller. Krishna lifted that hill, and as he lifted it, he uprooted it from the earth. And effortlessly brought it over his head and balanced with the little finger of his left hand. He was still smiling. He cried to all the Brijabasis, please come, bring all your cows and all your calves and all your family members and everyone else. Now look at Giriraj. He was so pleased by your offerings to him, he's become an umbrella. So everyone came under Govardhan Hill. 7 days and 7 nights, they all remained under Govardhan with Krishna in this beautiful darshan of Giridhari, threefold bending form, holding the flute, holding the hill. Every now and then he would play his flute. The cowherd boys were very afraid when he started playing his flute, because they were thinking, we have seen the effects of Krishna's flute. When he plays his flute, solid matter melts and liquid becomes solid. So if he's playing his flute so sweetly that Govardhan Hill may melt in ecstasy and drown all of us. So some of them were saying, Krishna, please stop playing your flute. And other gopas were saying, no, Govardhan is a very sober person. Giriraj will not melt. He will protect us. This may all the different residents of Vrindavan, Krishna, just by his glances and his smiles, was fully reciprocating with everyone's love. 24 hours a day for 7 days. No one had to sleep. Everyone was fully nourished, fully enthused, just seeing that beautiful form of Giridhari. And his smiles and glances conquered their hearts with ecstatic love. They never wanted that rain to stop. Meanwhile, while they were in ecstasy underneath the hill, not a drop of water came in. Indra was over there, and he was just screaming at the Samvartaka clouds, harder, harder, harder. And after some days, those clouds were totally depleted and exhausted. They came to Indra and said, we give up. And Indra himself, personally, on his elephant, started shooting thunderbolts and bringing the highest possible winds, cyclones, hurricanes, tornadoes, everything, bashing against Govardhan Hill. And after 7 days of all that, Indra did not have the power to remove one leaf from a single tree of Govardhan Hill. He could not move even 1 centimeter, 1 grain of sand from Govardhan Hill. Nothing. And even the animals that were on top of Govardhan Hill were just having a nice time. He couldn't even disturb them. The reason is because the tip of the little finger of Krishna was touching the bottom of that massive hill. And just from the tip of his finger, he was energizing, surcharging Giriraj with so much pleasure that nothing could affect him. Indra was humiliated. Because everyone's watching. Everyone's watching. 7 days. All of his personal powers, all of his most powerful representatives and servants, they couldn't uproot a single blade of grass from Giriraj. So he gave up. And he left. The sun came out. And Krishna was still smiling. He said, now the rains are ended, you could all go home. No one wanted to go home. But Krishna said, go home. You have duties to perform. So everyone left. The cowherd boys brought the cows. But then the cows looked back and they ran back and surrounded Krishna. They couldn't leave him. So with his glance, he was herding them out. And he placed the hill down just as it was exactly before the storms. Krishna was inspecting to see how everything was around Braj Bhumi. And Indra, he realized he committed a massive offense. He went to his guru, Brihaspati, and said, "What should I do? I tried to destroy Vrindavan. Now I understand that Gopal is God. He's the supreme absolute truth. He's the personality of Godhead. Due to my false ego, I forgot. I was so caught up with anger." Brihaspati said, "Oh, very bad. You are a fool. You are really a fool." He said, "You cannot approach Krishna directly. You try to destroy him. Only if a devotee approaches him on your behalf will he forgive you. So go to his cows." So Indra went to Surabhi, mother of the Surabhi cows, and she took pity on him. And at Surabhi Kund, she went to Krishna and she said, "Indra..." Krishna completely ignored Indra. "He's a little cowherd boy. He's the king of heaven. It's nothing. He ignored him. But then Surabhi said, "Indra is genuinely repentant for what he has done. Please forgive him." On the strength of Surabhi's love and compassion, Krishna forgave Indra. And he fell at Krishna's lotus feet, begged forgiveness. Showing that we have all made so many offenses in our lives and in previous lives. But if someone who Krishna loves and someone who loves Krishna, a dear devotee, prays on our behalf, then Krishna will hear our prayers. Forgive us and uplift us. And Indra, after condemning his own false pride and ego, thinking he was the controller, he said, "Krishna, from now on, you are our Indra. You are..." And Krishna was given the name Govinda. Another festival during the month of Karti is Gopastami. This is the first day that Krishna is given the charge of the cows. Doing his Kumar Lila, he was in charge of calves. When he entered into his Poganda Lila, from 6 years old to 10 years old, he was given charge of the cows. 900,000 cows. On this day of Gopastami, Yashoda Mai made nice shoes for Krishna. Because taking care of cows, you have to take them long distance into the forest and into the pastures. And Krishna told Yashoda Mai that, "I'm the servant of the cows. Unless you make the same quality shoes for all my cows, then I will not wear shoes." Now, what's 900,000 times 4? Huh? Well, you could all use your calculators later if you like. But that's how many shoes. So Krishna went barefoot. And he would herd his cows throughout the day. And with his Gopa friends, they would play so many beautiful games. All games which are simply actions and words to exchange love. That's all. Originally, every word, every movement, every action is simply a way to express our pure, unalloyed love for God and each other. That's what the spiritual world is. Even moving a finger like this. Now we just, so many of you are moving your fingers, you're not even aware that you're moving your fingers. Yes? So many of you are moving your legs because I'm giving too long of a class. Because your legs are paining. So we move so much and we speak so much, but in the spiritual world, every single movement to the slightest detail is a conscious expression of pure ecstatic love. Every sound that comes from us is an expression of our pure ecstatic love. Sometimes so many strange sounds come out of us, whether it's intentional or unintentional. But the origin of all sound, the origin of all movement, the origin of every particular function of the senses, the mind, the heart, is to exchange love. For what pleasure? I mean, for what purpose do we exchange love? To give each other the highest pleasure. That's the spiritual world. So when Krishna would play these games with the cowherd boys, we cannot imagine what type of ecstasy that is. Every movement of every cowherd boy was just an offering of ecstatic love to Krishna. And every movement of Krishna was for the purpose of reciprocating with every single cowherd boy. They would play. Can you imagine how enjoyable these games were? Because they were so enjoyable, there was no possibility of them ending. So Krishna's Lila Shakti, Yoga Maya Potency, she every day, just before lunch, would facilitate one of Kamsa's asuras to come to Vrindavan to interrupt the games. All of a sudden there is Keshi. Or there is Agasura. And then they had to end their games because Krishna had to do his beautiful leelas of liberating the demons. And watching, because Krishna would do it in such exciting, suspenseful, dramatic ways. Everybody would increase their appetites watching. And it would increase Krishna's appetite doing. And why was that? Because Yashodamai and the mothers of the different gopas had cooked lunch for them. They had their lunch containers. Prabhupada said they had their tiffins. Their packed lunches. And because Lila Shakti wanted them to enjoy their lunch as much as possible by Krishna's grace, they had huge appetites. Sometimes they'd go to the bank of Yamuna and they'd make circles around Krishna, like lotus. Krishna was like the whirl of the lotus and all the other gopas were like petals, different circles of petals around Krishna. There would be thousands and thousands and thousands of gopas. They'd all be around Krishna. And each one of them would be looking to see what Yashodamai made for Krishna. That was very important. And Krishna would be looking and saying, "What did your mother cook for you?" And then one of the boys would take a bite and say, "Oh, this is very good, Krishna. Would you like to taste it?" And Krishna said, "Yes, yes, yes, let me taste it." And the boys would take a bite and Krishna would take it and take a bite and Krishna would take a bite. And they were all sharing their prasad with each other, just trying to make each other happy. And this way Krishna's enjoying with his friends. And one great miracle is every single cowherd boy is thinking Krishna's only looking at me. He's only smiling at me. And they're in a circle around Krishna. And Krishna didn't have four heads to look in all four directions. He was only looking in one direction, apparently. He only had one head and two eyes in this form. But every gopa was thinking, he's only looking at me. This is Krishna's unlimited capacity to exchange love so perfectly with all living entities simultaneously. In the spiritual world, no one is envious because Krishna is fully satisfying everyone. Huh? That's translation? Okay. Because I don't know Hindi, it's not disturbing me. When it was at the end of the day, on the day of Gopastami, it was around Gopastami time that Krishna delivered Dhenukasura. And on the day of Gopastami, Krishna would climb the Terakadamba tree and he would call all of his cows individually and personally by name. Now, can you imagine calling 900,000 names? Haridas Thakur chanted 300,000 names a day. That's 192 rounds. Multiply by that by three. How many rounds is that? It's about... Huh? 576. Krishnananda Prabhu, you are revealing super excellent opulences. He is saying 576 rounds. That's how much... That's how many names Krishna would... How long would it take you to say 576 rounds? Now, Krishna called all 900,000 names with one name. This is the difference between you, me, and God. Krishna would say, Shyamali. But another cow would hear, Davali. And another cow would hear Suravi. In this way, every cow would personally hear her name through Krishna's voice. And every one of them, when they heard, and each one was thinking, Krishna's only calling for me. Of all the cows, he's just calling my name. And the cow would be in such filled with love that tears would flow from her eyes and she would respond to Krishna. And they'd come running back to the Terakadamba tree, all of them. And Krishna would be counting each one of them as they'd come back. And if any didn't come back, Krishna would jump off the tree and go and get them. And they would come back into the village of Nandagaon. And for the gopis, a moment is like 12 years or more. They were gone throughout the whole day, intensely feeling separation from Krishna. Yashoda Mai would be there running toward him. Nanda Maharaj would be coming. There'd be big feasts prepared for him. All the gopis would be standing and Krishna would glance upon them and they would glance back. And this exchange of glances completely satisfied the hearts of every little gopi. G- Gopastami is also the day we celebrate Gadadhar Das Srinivasacharya. Then there's Uthani Kadasi, which is also the disappearance day of Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. But there's another day in Kartik which is very, very special to us. A day that makes all the other days of Kartik accessible to us. It's the disappearance day of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. On November 14th, 1977, Srila Prabhupada, he left Vrindavan in 1965 with 40 rupees, boarded the cargo ship Jaladuta, sailed across the Arabian Sea, across the Middle East, Asia, Europe, then crossed over the Atlantic Ocean. Took almost 40 days, I think it was 38 days he was on the Jaladuta. Seasickness, heart attack, so many difficulties. And he wrote in his diary that I am feeling such deep separation from my lords, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Madan Moha, and Radha Damodar. I am feeling such deep separation from Sri Vrindavan Dham. But I am on this mission on the order of my Gurudev, Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in pursuance of the instruction of Lord Chaitanya. I am very unqualified, completely depending on their mercy, so far away from Vrindavan. Prabhupada went to New York City, and as Janani Vas Prabhu was so beautifully explaining in that magnificent class this morning, Prabhupada circled the world 14 times, taking great risk in old age just to teach people the love of Vrindavan. And when, by the arrangement of Sri Radharani and Shyam Sundar, it was time for him to leave this world, they brought him back to Sri Vrindavan Dham, where in Krishna Balaram Mandir, with loving devotees all around him, chanting the holy names, and with loving devotees all around the world, chanting and praying, he returned into the eternal lila of Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar in the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. In Srila Prabhupada's life, in his departure, and in his eternal grace through his books, through his devotees, through his love, he is giving us entrance into Vrindavan Dham. Srimad Bhagavatam has 12 cantos. Its culmination is the 10th canto, where it describes the beautiful pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And the very culmination, essence of the 10th canto is the 5 chapters describing the Rasa-lila. Our great acharyas explain we have to approach the Rasa-lila properly if we want to actually understand it with realization. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, unless we first understand how Krishna creates and his various other incarnations and his relationships with devotees like Dhruva and Prahlad and Ambarish and the Pandavas, we cannot approach Vrindavan Leela. Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the literary body of Krishna. The primary cantos are like his lotus feet. We must carefully start from the beginning and gradually, under the guidance of a proper guru and the association of devotees, we must try to deeply understand, assimilate, and apply these teachings to our life. And when we do that with genuine honesty, eventually we are prepared to approach the 10th canto, which is considered the face of Lord Krishna. And ultimately, through pure surrender, total detachment from materialistic selfishness, we can approach the five chapters of the Rasa Leela, Rasa Panchayat, which is the Lord's beautiful smile. Tonight we are celebrating the Rasa Leela. We understand that the love between the gopis and Krishna is the highest expression of pure, ecstatic, spiritual realization in the entire spiritual or material worlds. Krishna tells in Gita, Yogi namapi sarvesha madgate nantaratmana shradavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamamata. He describes the greatness of yogis. But of all yogis, one who loves me with pure devotion and faith is most intimately united with me in yoga and is highest of all. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashchasmi tatvata. Only by pure unalloyed devotion can I be understood and can one attain my abode. Bhaktya tvanini ashakya aham evam vidurjana. Only by such undevoted, uninterrupted love and devotion can I be understood as I am. Bhaktosime shakacheti rahasyam yetadutamam. Arjuna, you can understand this because of your love, because of your bhakti, and because you are my friend. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavam mam papadyate vasudeva sarvagmiti samahatma sudurlaba. After many, many births and deaths of cultivating knowledge, when one comes to the point of real knowledge, the highest knowledge, one surrenders to Vasudeva, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Sarva dharman parityasya. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I will protect you from all sinful reactions. And the culmination of the Gita, Man manabhava madbhakto madhyajim namnamaskuru mami vaishashi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise. We see this quality in the Pandavas, in Hanuman, in Ambarish, in Prahlad, in Dhruva, in the Prachetas. And ultimately we see it in its purest, highest form in the residents of Vrindavan. And among all the residents of Vrindavan, it's in its most intimate, inclusive, and sweetest form in the gopis. We read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that the gopis did not know or conceive of anything except Krishna's pleasure. Going to hell was not even a question of thinking about if it would give Krishna pleasure. Their love was spotless, pure, unselfish. This is love. If there's selfishness, it's not love. It's kama, lust. People say love in this world, but it's a corruption. Love is selfless. Love is I'm only concerned with the welfare of my beloved, even if it causes me pain. That was gopis. Krishna wanted to reciprocate with their love, their pure, unalloyed love, the perfection of the perfected, liberated soul's love for God. That is what Rasa Leela is. No romance of this world, no lust of this world, no selfishness. It's the highest expression of the pure, liberated soul's love for God, exclusively. Krishna stood under the Bamsiva tree as he saw the beautiful autumn moon rising on the horizon of Vrindavan. There was the breeze of Yamuna and the beautiful song of her current. There was the peacocks cawing and the sweet birds chirping, wobbling, trilling and singing. There was a wonderful fragrance of blooming Malika, Malati, and various other Mogra flowers. And all of the trees and the sky were displaying the most extraordinary beauty for the pleasure of Krishna. And River Yamuna was pushing forth magnificent, fragrant lotus flowers, experiencing this atmosphere. Krishna was feeling in his heart, this is the perfect time and place to give pleasure to the gopis. He played the fifth note of his flute, Bamsi. When he blew into the flute, it was not like you and me blow into a flute. We just, some air from our lungs makes a sound. Yes, maybe good sound. But this is transcendental. It was the intimate, full, ecstatic love of Krishna for each of his gopis that emerged from his heart of hearts and came through his mouth as his breath and filled the whole of the flute. And when that sound came out, it was the sweetest of all music, the original cause of all music. It was Krishna, the innermost love of Krishna's heart in sound vibration, soaring through the air, the atmosphere of Vrindavan. And he personally directed it into the ears of the gopis. Lord Chaitanya described, when that flute sound entered into the ears of the gopis, it went into their hearts. And it was like a bird made a nest in the ears, so no other sound could possibly be heard by them. And when it entered into their heart, Hari, he stole their hearts, stole their consciousness. They felt him calling. And whatever they may have been doing was irrelevant. They left their duties. They left their relationships in the middle of the night and ran out to meet with Krishna under the Bamsi Bhat tree. And there they came before Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis. Seeing him standing in his beautiful threefold bending form, they offer their hearts, their lives. And Krishna thanked them for coming. He said, you have risked everything to come here. I'm very much happy with you. And now you've seen the beauty of the Vrindavan forest and this elegant moonlight, and we've met. So now you can go home. The gopis were crying and drawing curved lines with their toes on the ground. They wanted to stay. There was a beautiful discussion. And ultimately the gopis conquered Krishna and they stayed. But then Krishna left. As they were having beautiful lila together, all of the gopis and Krishna left. And the gopis, they were searching through the forest, asking the moon and the stars, asking the trees and the river and the flowers, where is the son of Nanda? Where is Shamsundar? Searching and searching and searching. And ultimately they found two pairs of footprints. And they understood that there's one gopi who loves us more, who loves Krishna more than any of the rest of us. This gopi, her worship and her love for Krishna is supreme. He left everyone only for her. And they saw there was only one set of footprints. That this gopi must have been tired. So Krishna's carrying her. Then they saw only half a footprint. Krishna must have gone up on his tiptoes to pick some flowers for her. This section of the Bhagavatam reveals more than any other scripture, the supremacy of Sri Radha's love. Krishna left all other gopis to show the world that the source of all love, the highest love, is the love of Sri Radharani. This is the ultimate culmination of the Bhagavatam, the ultimate culmination of all of Vyasadeva's Vedic scriptures, the love between Radha and Krishna. And then Krishna left Radharani, and the gopis see her crying, and they were all crying with her. In this section of Bhagavatam, we find the beauty and the sweetness of love and separation. They were all crying. Together, Radharani and gopis, they recited the Gopi Gita, beautiful songs of love for Krishna in separation. Then Krishna manifested before them. And Krishna revealed to them that I only left you to increase the quality of your love, to increase the bliss of your love for me, for no other reason. And your love for me is so great that I have no power to repay you. Even with everything I am and everything I have in all material and spiritual worlds, in an entire lifetime of Brahma, I cannot repay you for your love for me. Krishna revealed he is totally conquered by the love of the gopis. So please be satisfied with that love. It was after revealing these qualities, then Krishna performed his rasa dance with Srimati Radharani and the gopis. The dance of pure spiritual love. On the bank of the Yamuna, in the forest of Vrindavan. And sometimes they would refresh themselves by bathing in the Yamuna and performing water sports among all the lotus flowers. And then they would dance and dance. Do you know how long they danced? An entire nighttime of Brahma. What is that? Four yugas melted, four yuga cycles multiplied 1,000 times. It's about 4.3 billion years. That's how long he danced with them. And they never even had to go to sleep. That was the nature of their love. But Krishna, who can do anything, he compressed that 4,300,000,000 years into one night. Krishna he revealed to the world that prema, or pure love, is the only thing that really satisfies his heart. Shukadeva Goswami was such a Goswami that he was so fixed in his total absorption into the Supreme that he didn't even recognize the difference between male and female. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the crest jewel of all sannyasis, the greatest renunciates, who had nothing to do with sex life, who had nothing to do with material possessions, who had nothing to do with any type of ego or enjoyment of the senses, they all unanimously agree that the love for the gopis is the highest and purest spiritual state of renunciation and detachment. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught his sannyasis that the perfection of renunciation is the gopis' love. And Srimad Bhagavatam shows of all the gopis, Sri Radha is supreme. And if anyone gets the mercy of Sri Radha, then Krishna is obliged to accept that person. Prabhupada says like this, that in Vrindavan, people say Jai Radhe more than Jai Krishna, because they know. If they call Radharani's name, if they please Radharani, she will say, Krishna, this devotee is better than me, please accept. And Krishna has no choice, he must accept. So this is the supreme method of yoga, is to somehow connect ourselves to Radharani's mercy. the divine feminine potency of the Lord. Radharani's love is so deep and so intimate that Krishna himself, who knows everything, past, present, and future, who knows everyone's heart inside and out, he is thinking, what is the glory of Radharani's love? What is it in me that Radharani sees that invokes such happiness? What is it that she tastes when she experiences my love? Her bliss is greater than mine by millions and millions of times. I want to taste it. Radha bhava duti suvalitam nomi Krishna swarupam. The one absolute truth is divided into two parts as Radha and Krishna to enjoy love. Now the two have become one again as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna, who wants to taste the sweetness of Radha's love. And he comes to do this in this material world so that he could distribute that same love to everyone and anyone without discrimination of where they're coming from, what they've done, who they are. All we have to do is chant the holy names according to his direction. Trinadapi sunichena taror iba sihishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. In this spirit of being the servant of the servant of the servant, Krishna will reveal all of his opulences within the name. Krishna's form, qualities, Krishna's abode, Vrindavan, Goloka, Krishna's associates, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's love are all within the name. If we can just chant in this spirit, Krishna reveals our eternal relationship with Krishna and gives himself. Sri Radharani gives herself to one who chants in this spirit. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, to give the highest revelation of Radha's love to us through the congregational chanting of the holy. Through our connection to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we serve one another with humility and sincerity, if we act as instruments of Prabhupada and the Acharya's compassion toward everyone in this world, and if we sincerely chant the holy names, we can gain entrance into the Rasa-lila. Dinahina yata chilo harinam udharilo tarasakshi jagai madhai. Narottam Das Thakur sang this with conviction, realization, and experience. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, the holy names have descended with such grace that even jagai and madhai attained Goloka Vrindavan through chanting. The two most abominable criminals . This is the gift that Srila Prabhupada gave to the world. Prabhupada was living at the Radha Damodar temple. There's a beautiful Leela in Vrindavan where Krishna and Radharani were having their Rasa-lila, and Krishna came late. So Radharani tied Krishna around the waist with some flower-bedecked creepers and tied him to a tree, Kadamba tree, I believe. And this is Radha Damodar. Just as Yashoda Mai bound Krishna by the waist with her love, Radharani bound Krishna by the waist by her love. Prabhupada lived there in Radha Damodar. Rupa Goswami Samadhi, Jiva Goswami Samadhi. This is right in the heart of Krishna's eternal Rasa Lila. Beyond the veneer of the earthly perception, Krishna's pastimes are eternally taking place in Vrindavan Dham. When Krishna, by his mercy, gives us the eyes to feel it and to see it. Srila Prabhupada was living all those years right at Seva Kunj in the heart of Krishna's Rasa-lila. He never left there. He brought the grace of Radha and Krishna, Sri Vrindavan and Rasa-stali in his heart to share it with whoever he met, with the whole world. And he gave that gift through every word of his books and through the society he's established. So if we simply become genuinely humble, deeply attached to hearing Krishna's words, his pastimes, deeply attached to chanting the holy names, and serving Srila Prabhupada's divine mission, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will come, lift us up like he lifted up Raghunath Das Goswami, and bring us to Radha Kund, Govardhan, and the Rasa Lila. Let us thank Prabhupada. Thank Srila Prabhupada for this supreme blessing he has bestowed upon the world. And let us be very grateful for the devotees who have so kindly connected us to that current of grace on this holy day of the moonlit night of Ras Purnima. Thank you very much. You sound very tired. I think you woke each other up very nicely. There will be no darshan till 6 o'clock. We'll have a very short kirtan. And then after that, you can all go down and take prasad. Is it still raining out? So where you take prasad will be according to your imagination. You may want to start going now. But we'll have just a few minutes kirtan, then we'll have a few hours kirtan beginning at 6 o'clock. And the Ras Purnima Darshan will be open at that time.